Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we look at a very popular secret society that gained momentum in the 18th century, known as the Bavarian Illuminati. You've heard of them referenced before, many times in fact. But back in the Enlightenment era, they were known for a time as the Perfectibilists. Perfectibilists, the 18th century Bavarian Order of the Illuminati, is the title of the book by our guest Terry Mollinson. We talk about the rise and fall of the Illuminati during that time, and what evidence exists that their influences survived up into our current world. Well, Terry Mollinson's research reveals methods of infiltrating governments, churches, and education systems. There is very little information pointing to the possibility that the Illuminati actually exist today. How can that be when Illuminati has become essentially a household word? Type it into a popular search engine and 40 million results come up. Video after video, article upon article, referencing that word. Yet, according to our guest, the trail runs cold, and there's little to no evidence based on his investigation that they exist today. Maybe this is another layer of manipulation, of being everywhere and nowhere at the same time. Or is it a comment on the power of memes, and how we all haphazardly repeat things and trust its validity without substantial research? Another preconception of the Illuminati, according to Mollinson's work, is that founder Adam Weishaupt had contempt for esoteric pursuits, for all forms of theosophy, occultism, spiritualism, and magic. Quote, "The Rose-Croix Masons are bracketed with the Jesuits by the Illuminati as enemies and to be outwit at every turn." It was a different time in the late 18th century for secret societies, but today, nearly everyone who mentions the Illuminati connect them with the all-seeing eye, occult practices, and dark magic. What do we really know about the Illuminati? Is our understanding completely wrong? Granted, their priority to conceal and code communications play a role in what we know about the Illuminati, but some member diaries were recovered that helped put some pieces together for Mollinson. Terry Mollinson joins us to talk more about his book, The Perfectibilists, that features biographies on more than 400 confirmed members. Terry is the owner and director of the online Illuminati Conspiracy Archive and has been writing about the Illuminati for nearly a decade. Terry, welcome to Another News.
Thanks for having me.
Why did you choose to focus in on the 18th century Bavarian order of the Illuminati?
Because there wasn't really a monograph on the Illuminati per se in English, because most of the sources, they were still in German. And so there really wasn't nothing to go to understand exactly what they're all about. So I had to really dig into the primary sources and get them from French sources and German sources to find out exactly what was going on. So it took me a while, and I wrote a long article, and I posted it on the website, and it was like 51 pages, Word document, pretty large article. I posted it, and then the next day or something, Chris Milligan, the publisher of Trine Day, he said, "Why don't you write a book on it?" So I went ahead, and I said, "I might as well be the one to do it, because nobody else has done it, and nobody seems to be working on it." So I went forth. It took me about 3.5 years to do.
Yes, it has that encyclopedia feel and is a reference document, certainly.
Yeah.
Well, paint the picture for listeners, if you will, of the Enlightenment era and how the Illuminati secret society had gained its foothold of infiltration into various institutions. What was going on back then?
Basically, it's the beginning of the modern age. And, like, science was flourishing, literature, philosophy, music. People like Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and even Mozart and Beethoven, they're all part of it. But in Europe, basically, they were still ruled by kings and queens. America had already had the revolution, and they drew inspiration from America, really. So did the French revolutionaries, the Illuminati themselves. But in Adam Weishaupt, the founder, he was living in Bavaria, and it was like a Catholic country. It was basically a theocracy, and he couldn't really teach the philosophy he wanted to teach his students, like French philosophers, Voltaire and Rousseau and people like that. And he was constantly getting in fights with the staff. And when the Jesuit order was finally suppressed in 1773, he thought it would finally get rid of them at the university where he was teaching at Ingolstadt University. And but that wasn't the case. They still were on the staff, and they tried to stop Weishaupt from being the professor of canon law because they weren't allowed to do it anymore. They were suppressed by the Pope in 1773, and then they installed him as the professor of canon law. So the fights continued, and back and forth was, they tried to get him fired a few times. So he decided to fight fire with fire because the Jesuits were always looked upon as a secret society working for the goals of the Vatican and trying to suppress any free thought or anything like that. So that's what he did. He got together mostly with his five of his students in 1776, and he instituted a secret society to infiltrate the society, anything to do with education or even the Freemasons, anything that had any pull within society. He tried to basically infiltrate it, his own members, into the system to change it from within.
I gotcha.
He was taught by the Jesuits, right? And from him being taught from an early age, like his parents, I think his mother died at birth, and his father tried to raise him, and he died when he was 4 years old or 6 years old or something like that. And he was adopted by his godfather, the Baron von Ickstadt. And his godfather was the rector of the university at Ingolstadt. And so he was brought up by him the whole time, and he got a real good education. And his godfather basically had the largest collection in Europe at the time of books. Like all the books that were banned by the Catholic professors and the priests that were running the show at the university, they had to go somewhere, so he took them all home. And so the young Weishaupt, he had full reign over the guy's, like, over 3,000 books the guy had stocked in his personal library. And I looked into what the average number of books that an intellectual during the Enlightenment would typically have. It was around 300 at the most. And so he had like 3,000 books. He was like a precocious bibliophile and read everything he could. And he thought he had like the answers to everything, basically. And he thought he could be the one that would change things.
In many of the books about the Illuminati, you often hear them referred to as revolutionary or revolutionary thinkers. And I'm starting to understand this a little bit more, but that term really isn't fully explained. What is it that they're revolutionary against?
Basically, they were against the Catholic hierarchy, in Bavaria in particular, because they were sort of backwards compared to France, especially, and compared to England, which had already had a revolution in the 1600s. And it really wasn't going anywhere. Practically a theocracy. Just when you think about it, Adam Weishaupt, he was born in 1748, and 2 years after he was born was the last witch burning that occurred in that country. So that's the kind of backwardness that was going on in those days. To have a witch burning like 2 years after the guy was born, it couldn't have been any better by the time he reached university years, you know?
So, Terry, within the concept of everyone has good intentions, what would you see as the Illuminati's good intentions here?
Well, he did have good intentions. Like, basically, he wanted sort of to make a republic, and eventually what he wanted to do was enlighten people through education, mostly, through books and stuff. But the methods he wanted to employ you know, to make a secret society, like totally secret, and infiltrate everybody he could. Basically, along the way, the different degree systems, you were told more and more about what the secret really was. And by the time you get to the higher degrees, was basically they wanted to get rid of the kings and the queens and even governments, because by that time you were so enlightened that you didn't even need them to tell you what to do anymore, right? Mm-hmm. But he thought it would take maybe hundreds of years, perhaps even 1,000 years, right? He had these big goals, a utopian heaven on Earth, basically. But his methods were suspect, and when they finally discovered them, there was a few of the initiates that got raided by the government, and they found all their documents, and they published them, and basically everybody knew what was going on.
This must have been difficult work for you when a lot of this material is secret to begin with, or secreted away in some form of communication. What were the revealing aspects of those documents that the government put forward?
Well, there's a lot of communications. Basically, the first set of what we call collectively the original writings, there were correspondence between Weishaupt and his other initiates and the higher-ups in the secret society. And basically, there's a lot of things, you know, they were plotting to get rid of the Jesuits and the religious organizations, and to infiltrate their members. They were constantly talking about things like that they wanted to do. And then they'd make pamphlets and they'd publish them themselves, pamphlets against the Rosicrucians, because the Rosicrucians were occultists, and they were against occultists. And that's another thing that today, when people talk about the Illuminati, they think they're like an occult order, which they weren't really. What they wanted to do was get rid of superstitious folly within the church itself, and plus the occultists at the time, who were rampant all throughout the Masonic lodges. And that's another reason why they wanted to infiltrate the Masons to get rid of the occult ideologies.
Describe for listeners, if you will, who may not be familiar with the mysticism, the occult rituals that were being conducted by the Freemasons, and what exactly put Adam Weishaupt off from these practices.
Well, there was a lot of seances going on, trying to raise spirits from the dead. Basically, anything that you would see in a New Age bookstore, right? That's basically what they were practicing back in those days. There was a lot of people trying to make gold out of lead. There was a lot of alchemy going on. And, basically, ritual was operative occultism that was going on.
Were the Illuminati atheists?
Some were atheists. Some read books from philosophers that were considered atheists at the time. A lot of them were materialists, and a lot of them were still spiritual, but they didn't take the word of God. It was just like a myth, sort of, that you do good unto others, and they would, even Thomas Jefferson, he wrote his own Bible, right? So he basically, he just took all the good words that Jesus said, and he took out all the dogma. And a lot of them were deists.
Some members of the Illuminati back in the 18th century were atheists. Some were materialists. Some, I guess, could have been agnostic. Is that possible?
Agnostic, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Some of them were Gnostic, even. Some of the higher degrees of the Illuminati had Gnostic tendencies in them. But it's the practices that were going on. I published another article on my old website afterwards. I listed all the different practices that the Rosicrucians they were into. They're into seances, clergy, thaumaturgy, astrology, sorcery, Kabbalistic magic, and alchemy. And basically, it's stuff like that they were totally against, because they thought they were hoodwinking everybody. And they were cranks, really. And that's when they were totally against stuff like that.
So they were skeptics, in a way.
Yeah, skeptics, oh, for sure. They would read all the old Greek authors and stuff.
Stepping out of the 18th century and moving forward just for a brief moment, in your research and what you've noticed today, does the Illuminati still exist in a powerful form? And if so, what is their influence now, today?
Well, that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to get to the bottom of it, if you could like trace it like all the way from then until now.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what I found was they sort of peter out. They started in 1776. There was a high-ranking Mason that joined, and he joined in 1780, basically finished all the rituals and dogma that were being taught to the order. He finished them along Masonic lines. He put in Masonic rituals, Masonic rites and stuff, just so it would have some mystery into it. But anything to do with occultism, like astrology, sorcery, and stuff like that, they didn't get into that stuff. And then after, when it got suppressed around 1784, the first edict against them by the Bavarian elector, then there was another edict in 1785, and that's when Weishaupt, he escaped from Bavaria and made his way to Gotha, where Ernst II of Saxe-Gotha, he let him stay there. And after that, there was another edict in 1787, and this time the Bavarian elector said he was going to give the death penalty to anyone who continued. Then there was another edict in 1790, that was like a year after the French Revolution, because they got mixed up in the Jacobins. They thought they were like one in the same. And then after that, they sort of petered out. You can see it if you looked at the actual documents. Documents weren't sent between them. And there was a second head of the Illuminati, Johann Bode, who took the reins from 1785. And by the time he died at the end of 1793, basically there was no remnants left of the Illuminati. But their influence on later revolutionary societies during the 19th century, that was one influence, but there's not like a continuous thing that went on. So if there's not a continuous thing that went on from then until there,
mm-hmm.
how can you make the leap that some sort of remnant from the original Illuminati still exists today?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I couldn't not document. So,
and that implies that what you know of the Illuminati back then may not be that particular type of manifestation, meaning they might be into the ritual magic and mysticism and occultism right now, or they communicated, it's not detected.
They couldn't be discovered.
They couldn't be discovered.
Yeah.
What do you think?
There's a possibility. That's total possibility. But a lot of work has to be done, and you have to prove it, right? And that's one of the things I wouldn't actually say anything unless I could prove it, right?
You wouldn't say that they possibly continued, you know.
I tried to give hints on different directions that other researchers could elaborate upon, right? That was one of the main things. And that's the reason why when I discovered that so many of the members were actually identified, like here in the books that we knew about the original Illuminati were basically Robinson's Proofs of Conspiracy in 1797, which was an English bestseller. And then the same year, Abbé Barrière, his Memoirs of the History of Jacobinism. Basically, they only identified maybe 80 members at the most. That's all they could identify through the original writings. But research continued on, unbeknownst to the Anglophile readership over here in England and in Canada and in the U.S., we didn't know that scholars, for all them years going, they were trying their hardest to get to the bottom of exactly who were the members. They found different archives. They went through, scoured every single archive they could find. And at the moment, they have identified close to 1,400 members. Okay. And so when I found that out, one of my goals was to, you know, put as many of the members I could, if they were ever written about in history, you know, if they were people worthy of being written about, I would try to get every single, you know, scrap of information. And that's like half of the book is just on members. So I thought if I included that, that people would investigate it further and possibly they could find a connection that maybe some of these members continued the order that we didn't know about previously.
The book was published back in 2009, The Perfectibalists. Has any author followed up on your work?
No. No author has followed up on my work. The people over here in the English language, all they know about is the Illuminati is the big boogeyman of every conspiracy, right? So I don't think conspiracy theorists really want to go into such things. They don't want to become like a professional historian and really get to the bottom of things. But I did give all the documentation. I gave all the sources they can go to. Every single paragraph has about three or four notes. Then when you look at the notes, you can see where I got each and every single assertion, right?
Oh, yes, yes. There's a lot of material at the end of every chapter.
Hopefully, like, somebody will take up the work. I'm still waiting, though.
Maybe this interview can prompt someone to pass the information along to an author who's looking for a topic to elaborate on, or it may connect with their previous work. Hopefully something like that will happen. But it is very telling that the word Illuminati has become or evolved into a catch-all term for something of a conspiratorial nature. I find that really weird because anytime it's mentioned in conversations, it can act as a trigger.
Well, it's basically because it was proof that there are actually organizations out there who have nefarious ends, who actually work in secret societies and try to hide their deeds from the public and actually try to infiltrate into the government and change society to their own ends. It's like actual proof that these things actually do occur, and we have an example of it. But when they talk about it nowadays, they sort of don't even mention that part, you know what I mean? When it was the initial impetus, because they wanted it to be the secret society above all secret societies. They wanted to not just control the government from the inside, they want to control every single secret society that existed during those days.
I was curious, because of the way you researched this material, it must have been very, very difficult. How would you summarize the techniques of communication by the Illuminati back in the 18th century?
The techniques were basically correspondences that they had between members, sort of like the Republic of Letters. But at the time, everything was censored. It would have to go through the censors before, like, the mail was open frequently, continuously. And what they tried to do was to get certain members who were on the censor board, they could not even open it up. So basically nobody knew what they were saying. And sometimes they would put certain words. So there was a lot of ciphers they tried to implement so that people wouldn't know exactly what they're talking about. And it seemed like they were just talking about regular things, but in actuality, they were talking about deeds that they were trying to accomplish.
Are there books that have a similar code that you have found?
Not really. Maybe in Masonic manuals and stuff that only like certain Masons know about it, like in their actual ritual books that are probably not published. But they were basically the only secret society that was discovered and suppressed on a wide scale.
Terry, I understand that the Saxe-Gotha family is the real name of the current royal family that used the name Windsor. how is the royal family connected to the Illuminati?
Well, they saved Bishop. Basically, he ran there and he received the protection of the royal family, and he stayed there for 45 years.
In Germany?
In Germany, in Saxe-Gotha. It was a province in Germany, or a duchy in Germany. And basically, he stayed there and he kept quiet, and nobody really heard a peep about him. He would write some philosophy books and stuff, but that's about it. And he stayed there for 45 years, and the second head of the Illuminati who took over after him, he went there in 1785, and the second head of the Illuminati, he was still trying to recruit members, like from that point on until he died in 1793, and he went to France in 1787 to try to initiate some of the French members of Freemasonry there. And he actually succeeded. And that's where they tried to make a new lodge within the Philadelphia that was called Philadelphia.
Can you talk about that word, the Philadelphia, and its meaning, and then how it evolved into the Lodge of the Philadelphia? And is it related to the name of the city, Philadelphia?
It could be. I'm not really sure why they named it. Maybe the reason why Philadelphia was named Philadelphia was the same reason why they named it the Philadelphs. Basically what it was, he went there and he instituted like a secret lodge within a secret lodge. Like there was, the lodge was called Les Amis Réunis, means friends of truth. No, reunited friends. And within that, there was a regime, they called it, with the Philalès, and they practiced all manner of occultism, same as the Rosicrucians at the time. And the founder was a pretty well-known Mason at the time, and first, when he went there, his goal was to try to get them to stop practicing all these occult rituals and join the Illuminati for the better good of mankind, to suppress the religious superstition and occultism. And it took him maybe a month and a half to convince them, and he finally initiated maybe four or five prominent members of the lodge, and they decided to not call themselves Illuminati in France, but they called themselves the Philadelphs. It was like a secret lodge within a secret lodge within a secret lodge. And the reason why we know that is because he kept a diary when he went over there, and it wasn't discovered until 1995. It was finally published in German.
How do you know that diary was authentic? Could that have been something to distract away from investigations?
We know it's authentic because while he was doing all this work from about 1785 till the time he died, 1793, mm-hmm. he was constantly recruiting members, not just from France. He sent a few people to Italy. He recruited some people in Italy. He recruited some people in Russia even. All this stuff, he was sending reports back to the lodge that was in Gotha at the time. It was like an Illuminati lodge that was still existing, unbeknownst to everyone else. And one of the things he sent back, or when he died, all his papers, not just the reports he sent, all his papers were bought by the Duke of Saxe-Gotha, because he wanted to suppress what was really going on, because everyone was... They were telling everybody, no, we're not still going on. The Illuminati is long dead and all this stuff. So he wanted to repress it. And he basically put it under lock and key until he died. And it was transferred to the next family member. And he kept it for 70 years. And then in 1883, it was transferred back to the Gotha Lodge. When the Nazis came to power, they were trying to find out everything that they could about the Freemasons, and they raided that lodge, and they took all the documents. they kept it until when the Russians were in Berlin. They then confiscated it and they took it to Russia, and it stayed there till about 1790. The Duke died in 1804, and he transferred the documents to the Swedish royal family. Mm-hmm. Okay, I wrote an article on it after I wrote the book. And then from the Swedish royal family, they put it in their archives in the Grand Lodge of Sweden, and that was protected for over 70 years. And then in 1883, at the request of the Duke's great-grandchild, he wanted it back. So from the Grand Lodge of Sweden, they took it back and they sent it in a boxcar, right? And that's why now we call it the Swedish box documents, because it was in a big Swedish crate. They transferred it back to his original lodge in Gotha.
Terry Melanson is our guest. We're talking about his book, The Perfectibilis, the 18th Century Bavarian Order of the Illuminati. We'll be right back after this break. If you've just tuned in, we're speaking with Terry Melanson, author of the book Perfectibilists, the 18th Century Bavarian Order of the Illuminati. Does anyone have a good summary on the documents and what they imply in terms of where the Illuminati exists today?
Well, nobody believes that they do exist. None of the scholars, at least, and the conspiracy theorists who assert that they exist really don't have any evidence.
Terry, I might ask, based on your extensive work and attention to detail in your investigations, do you think the Illuminati exists today?
No, I don't. Not an Illuminati that actually descend from the original. There were some groups afterwards that tried to pretend they were Illuminati, but they never had no proof that they were. And there could be maybe, you know, multiple groups that call themselves the Illuminati that are actually recruiting members and say that they are the Illuminati and say that they descend from Weishaupt's original order, but they don't.
What is your evidence that you can cite that makes you believe that they don't exist today?
One of the main evidence is because, there's so many on the internet, right? So many that have official websites, and they try to tell the history of how it was and how it all evolved. Basically, everything they say is wrong. A lot of them talk about it's a big-time occult society, and everything in the symbols that they say are associated with them, they weren't really associated with them. If, in fact, they were from the original Illuminati, the owl would have to be... Sorry, but it's this phone.
Okay.
after I learned all this stuff, right, and I couldn't trace it past, like, maybe, you know, the mid-1790s. I could trace, like, certain people within the order. I don't know if you read that part, like, they tried to reform Freemasonry after, basically, they disappeared. Like, some of the original members, they tried to reform German Freemasonry in particular, and a few of the initiates that the second head of the Illuminati had initiated. After the French Revolution, Freemasonry basically was destroyed. He revived it after it was over, basically right before Napoleon came to power. He tried to restore it again, and there's a good chance that maybe some of the remnants of the Philadelphs, because he was a member of that group, right? There's a good chance that he tried to institute the modus operandi, which was a secret society within a secret society. And if you look on the history of the Grand Orient in France, they were basically, most of the members were behind all the revolutions that occurred in the 19th century. So that's another line of investigation you could trace. Certain things like that, the revolutionaries during the 19th century, a lot of them took direct inspiration from Weishaupt, what he was doing and what he was trying to accomplish, especially infiltrating Freemasonry and using it to your own purpose. But as far as, like, anything after that, I'm trying to connect the whole thing up here all the way, you know, to the modern times, and there's no way I could not, and I don't think anybody can.
You do reference the Skull and Bones connection, which I thought just barely a thread of something written. Tell listeners about that, if you would.
Well, basically, there was two founders, William Huntington Russell. He was the main founder. So he went to Germany to study in Germany, and he went there in from maybe 1820 to 1831. And when he got back in 1832, he founded the Skull and Bones. There was a break-in at the Skull and Bones Temple in the 1860s or something. They produced a pamphlet in one of the Yale magazines or something, and they showed exactly what they found when they went inside. And they described that there was, like, pictures on the wall that said that it was only a chapter of a German corps from Germany. And it even had pictures of the original founders from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if anybody could go in there right now, we could take a picture of those original founders, then we could connect. Try to connect if there's any connection to the real Illuminati, but obviously nobody can go inside the tomb at Yale, right?
Unless you're a member. And then you're sworn to secrecy, of course. But does a photo of a painting or a painting on the wall necessarily yield evidence that the Illuminati exists?
Well, there's another painting hung on the wall in the tomb, and it was actually published in the Yale Journal sometime around that time. It has, like, four skulls, and it directly references a certain degree within the Illuminati at the time. Okay, the picture says, who was the fool, who was the wise man, beggar or king, whether poor or rich, all is the same in death. And that's under the painting itself, but it's in German words. And the first guy who noticed it was journalist Ron Rosenbaum. He published it in Esquire magazine. And he wasn't, like, a conspiracy theorist. He was a skeptic. But he had the tenacity to actually uncover this. And he was reading proofs of a conspiracy at the same time. And he noticed within that book, it was referencing our Regent degree, which one of the ceremonies was, according to the track, he says, a skeleton is pointed out to him. This is an Illuminati ritual now. At the feet, which were laying a crown and a sword. And then the candidate is asked whether this is the skeleton of a king, a nobleman, or a beggar. It's almost word for word of what's found in the Yale University. The Yale University says, who was the fool? Who was the wise man? Who was the beggar? Who was the king? Basically the same wording, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right, inscribed on this painting of the four skulls.
Yeah, and which directly references an actual degree ritual inside the Illuminati.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think the Skull and Bones members are using certain initiate degrees and rituals of the Illuminati behind the walls of this windowless building known as the Tomb and the Skull and Bones on the campus of Yale University?
I'm not sure if they really know what the rituals were. Some of the rituals that people say that they do doesn't really correspond to what we know about what the Illuminati did. But the painting says a lot because the other painting on the opposite wall, and they call it the Temple of the Room 322, that actually has the pictures of the original founders. Like, Skull and Bones was only a chapter of a student order that existed in Germany at the time. So I started digging, and I found out that within the main room in the Yale tomb, there's like a statue of Demosthenes. It's like a Greek rhetorician. And basically, it's like a temple to him. And I said, okay, if these guys like are worshiping this Demosthenes, I'm going to try to find if there was anything going on in Germany at the time. Was there a student society that actually was doing the same thing? Were they worshippers of Demosthenes?
Wow,
and I actually found it.
Good for you, Terry. That's fantastic. You found it.
And I found it in the university that was a haunt for Illuminati. Three of the professors were actually Illuminati members.
In Germany?
Yeah, yeah.
You write about this Greek rhetorician, and he passed away 322 BC, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one of the references, but very few know what it means because it's got a lot of different layers to it, even going to Egyptian references.
Yeah, yeah. But Demosthenes, he was like basically a martyr for liberty because he committed suicide rather than be captured I forget who was after him, but another government was after him. And they even have a teaching within the actual Illuminati about suicide.
Yes.
There was an actual tract that was part of the original writings that they confiscated. It was a big, long tract about the glories of suicide and stuff like that.
In the event that you're captured and...
It's
another way of keeping the secret.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts on the Illuminati continuing through the Skull and Bones members?
Well, I think many of the same goals are the same. Once they left the university, they were basically, a lot of them tried to infiltrate the educational system. They became the heads of all kinds of universities. And it's like it's a secret society. They don't answer to anybody but themselves. And a lot of the same methods of infiltration and trying to gain power for their own members. That's the same sort of thing they're doing too.
And then you have the political aspects of the Bush dynasty, of course, that is campaigning for a presidency right now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say that Jeb Bush is in line and would be telling if Jeb Bush becomes president, and then it would be a very revealing of the bloodline aspects.
It'd be a shame.
What are the connections among those Supreme Mason councils and the Illuminati?
I don't think there's any connection, really, especially the Scottish Rite Masons, because they have the myth that the Templars actually started the Illuminati, and the Illuminati themselves were totally against that. They didn't believe it at all. And they actually wrote pamphlets making fun of it.
Terry, in your research, do you find with all the secrecy and doublespeak and intentional veiling of information, it becomes very confusing to get a read on what their real goals are and what their intentions are and what they actually are? Do you find that problem at times?
Well, yeah, it's because people are they're thinking about what the myths that have accrued over the years, and a lot of it doesn't really jive with what was going on back then. You know, the order was basically a political strategy, tried to gain control of the highest levels of government and insert their members into the highest levels. And that's the enduring legacy of them. A lot of people take inspiration from that, and they have throughout the years. And to me, it doesn't really matter if the existence continued all through these years, because so much has been printed about it that it's actually true, like especially that part. People will continue to take inspiration from it, try to institute their own secret society and work along the same lines. Like Bilderberg groups, Council on Foreign Relations, stuff like that.
The Bilderberg group, the name is based on the hotel that they meet at.
Yeah.
Are there Illuminati members in that group?
Well, I don't think there's actually Illuminati members. There's elite. There's always been a ruling elite over us. And, you know, a lot of them have the same goals, but they don't get along either. You know, it's a power grab constantly. But a lot of the same goals are the same thing. They try to infiltrate their members into the governments of various governments all across the world to try and get a leg up and influence policy from within.
I noticed on the political level some of the manifestos reference socialist government systems or communist government systems. And is that a dominant political strategy for Illuminati members?
Not so much, really. Kryptocracy, really, was the main modus operandi. You know, and eventually when everybody became enlightened enough, like perfected through education and various other methods, then people would not need governments anymore. It was basically like proto-anarchism, like no state, no government, nobody telling you what to do, stuff like that. That was their main goal. And it was a worldwide strategy. They wanted to eventually do it worldwide, and a lot of the secret groups today, they have this sort of the same goal, you know, a new world order, they always say.
But that is just the opposite to me, that the new world order seems to be the lockdown, the surveillance state. You can't move without anyone.
Well, that's the thing about the Illuminati, too. It was a surveillance state. They would constantly monitor everybody. They would have to write down all the minute details about everybody they encountered. Like thousands and thousands and thousands of questions needed to be answered. They would pass in their diaries to the higher-ups, and then the higher-ups would pass it up to the higher-ups. And at the top, everybody knew everything about anybody, not just about them themselves, but all their friends, all their family, down to the minutest detail.
Yes, I feel that the Illuminati didn't disappear, and that some aspect of it has been carried forward in today's political and religious and educational institutions.
The strategies live on. That's the way I look at it. You know, you can't prove anything beyond that. You can prove that some of the same strategies they wanted to implement are being implemented on a scale that they would wonder at. They wouldn't believe what was going on. You know what I mean?
Terry, tell listeners, if you would, how you got interested in this particular area. Aside from no one's written about this and there was the opportunity to write about it, what drew you into this topic?
I've always been a bibliophile, like ever since I can remember, even, you know, back in grade school. Sometimes I'd quit class just they'd find me in the library. I'd have like about 10 or 15 books just around me. I'd just look in the library. That's all I cared about. And then later on, you know, maybe in my 20s to 30s, I read everything I could on every subject that, you know, the subjects they didn't teach you in school. And I'd order books from secondhand stores and stuff. I get them sent to my house. And a lot of the material was, you know, conspiratorial material and stuff. And a lot of it was about UFOs and paranormal and stuff.
Yes.
But I gravitated towards the Illuminati because they were the big honchos. Everybody was saying, this is the main conspiracy that controls everything. I decided, you know, what's going on here? I got to figure it out. So that's what I did.
Were you ever approached by the Freemason groups or anyone like that saying, hey, you're doing interesting work. Why don't you join up with us?
Yeah, because I used to have fights with them and fights with them in forums and stuff. And some of the arguments that they thought I couldn't dismiss, I would blow them away by my knowledge, you know. And they appreciated that. They especially appreciated some of the stuff I was telling them about the Illuminati. And a lot of them asked me to join, but I'm not a joiner, you know. I like to be independent. I don't like to be associated with any organization, really. So, no, I would not join the Masons.
Terry Melanson, author of the book Perfectibilists, the 18th Century Bavarian Order of the Illuminati. Thank you so much for sharing this wealth of information in the book and for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad you had me on. It was a pleasure.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again on Dark Matter Radio. For more information and links to the guests, visit inothernewsradio.com. Thank you.